So Mike read the fancy bio about me. I forget when I'm asked to send something like that in, that it says what it says, and then people read it. And I'm sitting right here. It's just strange to hear. Y'all know I'm an ordained PCUSA minister. I edit it every time I hear it. Like, there are some things I'm going to be cutting out of that. You know all those things. But one of the things that it mentioned was that I was a campus minister. And I was a campus minister at Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina. And I loved that job. I loved working with college students. My congregation changed every semester, not every year, every semester, depending on who's studying abroad, who's new to the group, who joined another group, who doesn't like our group, who doesn't like their group, who decides to transfer, all of that stuff. It changed all the time. But I love the questions. I love working with them. And I love life on a university campus. Serving there was a lot of fun. There's a lot of opportunities for things to take place, lectures and cultural events and all that stuff. They had a lecture series. The chaplain's office hosted a lecture series called What Really Matters. It was an endowed series. Two parts. The first part was in the fall, the second in the spring. And the fall speaker was usually someone who graduated from Furman or was a staff member or a professor or something like that. And they would talk about what they thought really mattered in life and how it impacted their work and maybe how Furman helped shape that too. And the spring speaker was typically someone from another college or university community, another well-known person. Maybe they'd just written a book or something, but they came in and would give the same talk. These were like TED Talks before TED Talks were really something. It was about 20 to 30 minutes, had time for questions and answers afterwards, and then always refreshments, because if you wanted students to come, you had to keep it under an hour and serve cookies and drinks afterwards. So everybody could leave. They got credit. They had to do a certain number of these cultural event programs. So this was one of the things. Get students there, keep them under an hour. They love it, and they go forth. Everybody's happy. One of the primary purposes of this series was to remind the students and anybody else who was there, but the students in particular, that while they face the day-to-day pressures of academic life, like balancing demands set forth from their parents and their professors and their friends, there is also a practical side to their studies. The studies would eventually, hopefully, get them into the real world, get them a job, where at times no amount of classroom preparation would be sufficient. Because there's the theoretical side of life and there's a practical side of life. And many times these two line up, but sometimes they don't. And your theory doesn't quite come in handy in practical situations. Determining how to balance those can also be a task. But if the students had a core belief structure at heart, and if they could identify what really matters to them, then they could navigate this tightrope of theory and practice. And there are times when what we believe gets called into question in practical ways. Now, as Mike said, we live in Augusta, as I've said before. We live in Augusta, and we got hit pretty hard by the recent storm. Many in our region have as well. A lot of devastation, a lot of loss from Helene, and then in Florida with Milton. There's still trees. We had a big old tree fall in our house. It crushed Lucy's car. She's carless, but she's studying in Sweden, so she doesn't really need it right now, which is good. Covenant Presbyterian was really damaged. Just a couple miles down the street from Brandy's church. Her church got hit by a tree and had a lot of water damage. Their organ is completely damaged. A lot of issues there. It fell on the corner of our house. It fell on the corner of our house. There's a hole in our house, holes in the siding, Lucy's car crushed. And now we have what I think is a possum living in our attic. All God's creatures have a place in the choir. So, you know, we have learned that what we hold in practice, if we pay our power bills, if we do the right things, if we take things for granted, that the structures we put in place will always be there. But we've learned again, we're reminded again, that that's not necessarily true, because we turned on the power switch and no power would come on. We turned on the tap to get clean water, and then we remembered we had to boil it for about a week. We thought our homes were shelters, and now many people have unlivable houses. They're trying to find temporary housing in Augusta. You know, we wondered what we were going to wear for that particular day. Some people plan their wardrobes all week long. Some of us just wake up and pick something that smells clean. Many people in our community lost everything. We thought one of Brandy's members, church members, went on an important business trip. He'd been working for over a year to design some pump. He's an engineer, so this may resonate with some of you. He designed a pump to pump stuff. He presented it at this trade show. Big success. The storm comes. The tree falls on his house and kills his wife and dog. And the pump doesn't matter anymore. That doesn't matter. Because when we're faced with what really matters, then these other things don't matter. Everybody in Brandy's church has this new perspective on what really matters in life because Cap was killed by the tree. There's a lot of loss in our community. But what's been interesting is that not many people have responded like Job sometimes did. Not many of us have complained bitterly, at least what I've heard. We could have, because we lost a bunch of stuff, but it's just stuff, because we have each other, we have our friends, we have these other support structures in place. The stuff that we lost can be replaced, it can be repaired, it can be fixed. And now all those dead tree limbs are in front of my house. I'm trying to figure out how I can spray paint them to look like a Halloween scene. Because I think that would be cool, but I'm not really an artist. Sometimes we're forced to examine what we hold dear. Sometimes we're pushed to examine what we hold to be sacred. In today's story, Jesus has been building up to this scene, this encounter, in a number of ways. Because not long before this with the rich young man, Jesus reminded the disciples that in order to truly inherit the kingdom of heaven, they have to become like children. And before that, he told them that in order to really be his disciples, they must deny themselves and take up the cross and follow him. Jesus has been saying what really matters are not the attractions of the world or the old systems of religion and governance that many held so tightly to in that time, but a new way of being in the world, a new way of being that's focused on Jesus, focused on community, like the anthem said, focused on others and being a servant and not seeking self-glorification. This is emphasized in his commentary to the disciples. First, he calls them children, and then he calls them certified cross carriers, affirming the sacrifices that they have made of leaving their homes and their families and their work to follow him. All of this centers on this rich young man. He wants to make sure he's in the same class as the disciples, a certified cross carrier and member of the household of God. I'm sure people knew him. These are small towns. Everybody pretty much knew everybody. I'm sure they knew his story, how he got his money. Some probably admired him. Some probably were jealous of him. Some probably didn't really think much about him at all because he just wasn't that interesting. Some probably respected him. He is wondering about how he can inherit eternal life. Probably the one last thing he would need, as he clearly has everything else. And when pressed, he admits he keeps all the commandments fully all throughout his life, at least since he was confirmed in the church. But since he's a doer, Jesus tells him to do one more thing. Take all you have, sell it, give it to the poor, and then follow me. And this poor fellow, with these extreme demands of selling everything and giving it to the poor, and following Jesus with what might be extreme judgment, because it's impossible for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God, and the extreme promises of grace and reward, with God all things are possible, all of this builds this scene. These assertions are held together with no attempt by Jesus to lessen this tension. And I want to know what happens to this guy. I mean, a lot of people talk about what this, how Jesus created this scene on purpose, how he made this guy come to this point of decision. And I just want to know what happens with him. I mean, where's Paul Harvey when you need him to do a little bio on this guy? We don't know what happens to him. And Jesus gives all this commentary about, you know, what may happen to him, what may not happen to him, what the disciples have done and what they've left behind and what the promises will be and all that stuff. And at the very end, he says, nothing's impossible for God. And, you know, sometimes that gets said in ways that maybe Jesus didn't intend. Jesus talks about it when transforming someone's life, not as a way to manage grief or to cope with tragedy or some other thing like that. But he talks about it through this, the camel getting through the eye of a needle. Y'all know this part of the story, like the camel's gate? Have y'all heard that? Y'all been good Presbyterians for a long time and studied Mark, right? Like, the legend is there was a gate outside Jerusalem that was so narrow and so small that camels, when they came in with their stuff, had to take it all off and kind of kneel down to come in and be reloaded up to go back into the marketplace. So the theory is that this was maybe invented, or maybe it was actually there. But, you know, is used to help point out that what burdened this young man was his stuff, that he needed to strip down from all of his stuff in order to be who Jesus was calling him to be. Because his stuff marked who he was in the community at this point. We don't know what his name is. Nobody knows his name. He's the rich young man. But I like to think that deep down, he knew that all of his stuff was a burden, that pursuing it, that maintaining it, that, you know, keeping it, hoarding it, growing it, whatever else, was too much of a burden for him to bear. And it was wearing him down. Lutheran pastor David Lowe says he knew he needed healing. He knew he needed to be free, because everybody in Mark's gospel who comes up to Jesus and kneels down before him knows that they need Jesus' healing. When they're brought to him, they're placed at his feet. When this guy comes up to Jesus, he kneels down before him and asks about an inheritance, which he knows is given and not earned. And so he wonders how he can earn an inheritance that can only be rightly given to him. And again, we don't know what happens to him. We fill in the gaps. That's why I asked them, and why I asked you all, what you think happened to the fellow. I like to think that maybe he did what Jesus said. Some people point out that maybe this guy is actually Zacchaeus, and we read about him later in Luke's gospel. I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe this guy realized that he did need to sell all what he had and give it to the poor. Maybe he realized that he liked his stuff more than he wanted to follow Jesus in this particular way. I don't know. But I think with this text, one thing this text does and invite us what burdens us, what we're willing to give up, what weighs us down, what holds us down. And I wonder if we think about it, we might realize we're burdened by a lot of things, a lot of stuff. Do y'all remember Marie Kondo from several years ago with all the joy of, what was it called? The joy of simple living or something like that? It's like getting rid of your stuff, like taking this blanket and thinking, oh yeah, this was wonderful and I loved it and I wrapped my baby up in it and now it serves no more purpose. So I'm giving you, I mean, it's not that crass. That's how I made fun of Brandy when she's getting rid of all of my stuff. She didn't get rid of our stuff. She got rid of she's going through all of my things. Like, well, you don't wear this soccer jersey anymore. You don't need it. I'm like, that's my high school soccer. You don't need these letter jackets. Don't you dare touch those things. That's my stuff. Don't get rid of my stuff. But there are things that we have that burden us down, that weigh us down. And we can be pushed or prodded into thinking through what that is, or we can prayerfully consider what that is and how we want to respond with great joy. Do y'all do stewardship cards and things like that? Stewardship seasons, stewardship pledge drives and all of that. That's one of the reasons we do that year after year after year, is to help us examine our lives and to prayerfully consider how we want to be part of God's church and how the things that we have are really gifts from God and maybe what burdens us and weighs us down and keeps us from following God fully. It's something that as you do, and as I've invited churches all over to do, I really hope they take it seriously. I'm not saying you don't. I really hope that you take it seriously every single year, because it's a great practice and a great discipline to think, how do my gifts and how are the things that I've been given, how can they be used to build up the church and build up the kingdom in this particular place? And some people do it begrudgingly. My last church, when the fellow was giving the talk, I had each committee chair talk about the committees. I thought this was a great idea, right? So the worship committee. In worship, we do body, body, blah, which is everybody kind of knew because we were in worship together when they're doing this. But we do these things, and we do this, and we do this, and it's a joy to serve and worship and, you know, fellowship and all that stuff. The admin chair at the very end gets up. They have financial responsibilities, and he says, our budget has increased by 4.57%, so please give 4.57% more. Thank you. And I just wanted to sing, give thanks with a grateful heart. Again, not to pick on engineers, but Chuck's an engineer too. So that's just how his mind was working. He was working off his spreadsheet. Our stuff is helpful. They're tools for use to build up God's kingdom. But our stuff isn't the end-all, be-all. In the Outlook, Jill Duffield wrote a story about an elder who, when his wife died, realized he had a bunch of stuff. And so what he did was he would read the paper, and if he saw foreclosure notices, he would go to the courthouse and write a check to pay off the mortgage so that the person wouldn't lose their house. And then he would write him a note saying that everything that I've been given throughout my life is a gift from God. When we see things as ours, like the rich young man did, it becomes harder to let go of it. But when we see it as a gift of God, and knowing that we're stewards of what God has given to us, then we realize just how blessed and how rich we are. And maybe that's what the rich man missed. He thought he had earned everything and gained everything himself, and that it wasn't a gift of God. And we don't know the rest of his story, but we can get working on the rest of our stories. And Jesus in this text is inviting us to a deeper discipleship, to look at what really matters in our lives and to act in faith accordingly. And so I'd like to think that this fellow chose the path of discipleship and not comfort and security as he thought it was defined. Because the path of discipleship is hard, but it gives great joy. And there are crosses to carry, but it's resurrection that we get to at the end. And there are a lot of demands on it, and there's a lot of people that we encounter along the way, but there's life abundant and many, many great opportunities. And the greatest opportunity is to be freed from all that burdens us and to live fully as the people God calls us to live. The question this young man faced and that we face together and the church faces is, how are we going to respond to God's great gifts of generosity? And what will be the rest of our story as we move forth in faith together? I invite us all to prayerfully consider these as we move forth in this life and this journey together. And we give thanks to God for all that God has given to us. Amen.